everyone. I'm Jen.
I'm Anthony, and this is Bottom Bracket Biking Podcast.
A couple's guide to biking. Welcome to episode 16, everybody. Today, we're going to be talking about winter riding, and we brought in an expert for that because, as you may have noticed in our last podcast, we're a bit weeny about that.
Yeah, nobody actually complained about it, but I could hear it in the back of my head. So we have our friend Genesis, who rides, what, every day? How often do you ride?
I try to ride every day.
Yeah. So I don't ride that often. You bike to work, correct?
Every day.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, so she knows just a little bit more about how to make winter riding work than we do.
Yeah, and beyond that, didn't you do, like, courses?
I mean,
you've talked about this before, right?
I have, yeah. I talk about it now that we're in the cold season, almost on the daily at my job. I work in sales at Bike World. Our store in Urbandale is on Douglas, and it's super awesome. So if you ever have questions and you want to ask them in person, that's where I work. I also have taught classes at REI when I was working there for winter commuting and cycling.
Yeah. And the Bike World up in Urbandale is pretty cool. I like that shop. I have nothing bad to say about it to people.
But yeah, Genesis has a lot more experience with this than we do. So this is partly us getting a chance to ask questions, but also we thought that it would be something that would be good to share with all of you.
So since you ride basically every day, you ride morning and night, right? Between work?
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you been in some like really gnarly conditions that you just didn't want to bike anymore? I guess what's the worst conditions you've ever biked in?
Well, there are the gnarliest conditions I've biked in, which luckily enough for me, I was prepared for those. And then there's the experience that I had the worst time in, which wasn't necessarily the gnarliest weather, but it was me and a lack of preparedness.
So can you tell us about that one a little bit?
The second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was not too cold of an evening. Nighttime, sun had fallen already, 40 degrees, no wind, no precipitation. But I had only one layer on the bottom and the inappropriate layer on top and gloves that were too thin, and it caught me off guard, and it just chills you to the bone. Your core is tense. You can't hardly think. Your fingers are numb. But it was conditions that I wouldn't have even blinked at. So it caught me off guard, and it definitely goes to show that you can be in a dangerous situation even in conditions that don't seem dangerous.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought you were going to say like, oh, it's negative 20 in a snowstorm and I had to walk. But no, 40 degrees, just not prepared, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Miserable.
Yeah. What's the gnarliest conditions that you were prepared for? I guess on the other end of the spectrum.
I think it was in 2018 or maybe 2019. We had a snowstorm that everybody was calling Snowmageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I work in West Des Moines and live in Des Moines. And it's about a 10-mile commute. And that morning it had snowed and thawed and frozen and then snowed quite a bit more in the evening. And so there was a layer of ice and it was just really squirrely snow. It wasn't super deep, maybe 3 inches. And I had 2-inch tires, but I couldn't hold a straight line for the life of me. And the wind was definitely blowing. It was almost white out. The fun thing about it was that we had all the right gear on. I commuted home with a friend and we were totally prepared. And other than not having the ability to hold a good line, it was just a fun challenge and really cool to be able to say, we biked home in a literal blizzard.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think the worst I've ever been, both prepared and conditions, was Spotted Horse, where it was a 150-mile ride, but I had a ski jacket on. And so I just kind of sealed everything in, and I was soaking wet by the end of the day, and I got hypothermia, moderate hypothermia, and I almost totally gave up, and I should have. But it wasn't even that cold. I mean, it was like 40 degrees, like you said, but I'd been out there for so long. My body temp had just dropped to the point of a pretty dangerous situation, actually.
So I guess to start this, Genesis, before you even put on your first piece of clothing, what do you need to know about winter riding?
I would say that most of the battle that comes with winter riding is maintaining a good mindset. It is something that is 100% attainable for anyone. And all you have to do is invest a little time in finding your perfect kit and the right gear that works for you, but just a positive mindset and realistic expectations. No matter how much good gear you have, you just have to realize going into this that it's never going to be like riding in warm weather. there's always going to be a different element to it. And so knowing that and going into it, knowing that really helps moderate any disappointment.
Yeah, attitude is something that I kind of struggle with because once it gets cold, I don't want to go outside. And it gets dark at 4 o'clock. Like, who wants to go bike in the dark?
See our last podcast for more complaints on this.
See our last podcast where we complain for a half hour. So, I mean, that's something I personally need to work on quite a bit.
So I guess, Genesis, to start out with, I'm assuming that a lot of the gear that you need is clothing related. So can you tell us really what you'd look at for clothing?
Yeah, I'd say that 99% of your efficacy out in cold weather is the clothing you wear. Where there's a saying that I've heard, there's no bad weather, just bad gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I really embrace that. And so I would say the first tip to dressing for cold riding conditions would be to prioritize a layered system instead of a do-it-all garment like a thick jacket or a really warm sweater. Those things are really hard to moderate your temperature or to vent. Mm-hmm. If you've just got one piece and then you take it off, you're either freezing or you're overheating and sweating.
That's funny you mention that because that's one of the biggest things that you actually showed me. I don't remember how we ended up at REI, but I think I drug you there and made you show me what I needed. Because I was terrible at it. Every time I would go out, I would end up soaking wet and hate my life. So I got that coat that is literally hanging right behind us, which is breathable, but not too breathable. And I can unzip it and it vents air through to actually cool off. It's amazing. And I wear it all the time. I mean, it's not my do everything coat. I know you just said that.
I think one of the interesting things to note about that is that it works really well. Anthony can either wear it over just a jersey or he can put like a long sleeved insulating shirt under it, things like that. And it's just a good outer layer for most of the cold weather. I actually ended up with the same jacket as that just because I was so jealous of Anthony was not complaining about the cold. I'm like, I want that.
Yeah, there might be better, but it's not a ski coat.
I guess I wanted to ask, do you have the same base layer system, pretty much whatever, and then you just build out from there? Or do you change like your entire setup for different temperatures?
That's a good question. I definitely have different setups for different temperature ranges.
Okay.
And I would say that the most important thing when you are figuring out what works best for you is to have 3 different shirts of different thicknesses in your arsenal and then experiment with each of those thicknesses on different days in different temperatures. And you pretty quickly figure out anything below 40 and I need my next level up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought some examples to show you guys if you wanted to see what kind of thicknesses I'm transitioning from depending on the conditions. And it's the same with pants. I've got thin leggings, I've got insulated leggings, I've got a shell pant, and any combination of those 3 things together will either serve as my 40, 30, 20 and below kits. So.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So you have like 3 different kind of thicknesses.
Yes.
But as you get colder, you can like layer those up.
Exactly. Oh. Yes.
Because, yeah, I have like insulated leggings and like insulated pants too.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never decide like, oh, do I choose that or which one do I choose?
Right.
And the answer is layer them if you have to.
Yes. And the beauty of layering is the most important thing about layering is if you get too hot, it is super easy to take one of those layers off. I have literally shed a pair of pants on the sidewalk in front of the city when I was too warm. Because it's just, it takes a moment and then it prevents you, you know, or if you have that extra layer, it's easy to throw on, conversely.
Do you ever forget that you only have one layer on, accidentally take your pants off in front of a bus, school children?
In my nightmares.
That is the perfect response. Thank you.
Yeah, Anthony, I feel like one of the things that you might have to get over is you don't like wearing, like, tight pants.
Yeah, I don't like anything tight on my just whole body. I hate it, but that's probably part of it, huh?
You know, Brian doesn't like that either. He says that when he's cycling, he feels like tight pants are very restrictive, and it makes it more difficult.
Yeah, I just don't like it, and so I usually go with my pants that are too thick for the temperature.
Right, right.
End up sweating down my legs and freezing cold up top.
Dang, that sounds great.
No.
Yikes.
That's why I love cold riding so much. So before we get into what to wear for what temperature, I mean, we're going to be talking about a bunch of different clothing stuff, and not everyone can go out to their favorite overpriced outdoor store and buy all this stuff off the shelf. Do you need to buy, you know, high-tech, state-of-the-art fabric for this to work? Or can you go to your local thrift store and buy, like, a long-sleeve shirt and have it work?
Definitely, you don't need to spend a lot of money learning how to dress yourself for cold riding conditions. My first year I commuted in the winter, I was just wearing clothes that I'd already had, non-cycling specific stuff, thrift store stuff. Anybody can patch this together with the flannels they've got at home.
So that my other question is, you say cotton kills a lot. Does that mean you just shouldn't ever wear cotton fabric? Because, I mean, cotton's cheap. That's like what most shirts are made of, right?
Yes. Cotton is super convenient because it's so available. And I have actually found that in dry conditions, cotton can be so comfortable. I wouldn't wear cotton in warmer conditions because then you start sweating. It does breathe well, but for anything wet, it's not great. And that's why people say cotton kills. It holds on to moisture, keeps that moisture next to your skin, which can drop your body temperature.
Oh, so it's more of something to be aware of. If you're going to go that route, be very cognizant.
Yeah, or wear a synthetic layer underneath that cotton so that the moisture gets wicked away from your skin. And then at least you're not constantly feeling wet.
Yeah, that's kind of where I started when I was trying to figure out layering was, you know, I got the base layer first. And a lot of times if you're willing to go to places like, you know, you can find it on eBay, you can go to REI garage sales. I got a really good base layer shirt that had a seam that was coming undone and sewed it back up. And I think the whole thing was $10 instead of, I don't know, 50 or 60. So just kind of knowing where to start, things like being aware of when cotton matters and building from there, I think that can be really important.
I will say that cotton is super cozy in the colder months when you know that you're not going to be sweating a ton or riding in the rain. I love wearing cotton flannels. It's just so much warmer and it does breathe well. So it lets you get rid of some of that excess body heat that you might build up.
So if you're not going to buy space age fabric, you just need to know kind of the limitations of what you have.
That's right.
So do you have like set temperatures that you can look for to determine what you're going to wear?
Yes, I hang on the weather forecast every day when I am commuting in the winter. And generally, with the gear that I have, I tend to break the temperature zones up into the 40s, anything in the 30s, down to 25. So 40s, 25, and then 25 to 15 is a block that feels pretty similar to me. And then anything below 15, I start getting into my extreme gear.
So for the warmer temperatures, kind of what do you wear? I mean, 40 to what, 60, 50?
For warmer temperatures, I like to wear one thin synthetic long sleeve base layer on the top if it's 40s and 50s. And then I might have a thin flannel on over that that could or could not be removed during the ride.
Okay, so you have two thin layers as opposed to just like one coat.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For our listeners, you guys don't know this, but we have show and tell time. Genesis has brought a selection of clothes to look at so we can actually talk about kind of what is actually being worn instead of just this nebulous thin layer. We can be like, oh, this is very thin, you know. I'm excited. We've never had show and tell before.
Yeah, I find that in the 40s, you'd be surprised. If it's high 40s, you'll definitely just end up with one layer by the end of it. And sometimes even a long sleeve is more than you need. But in those shoulder seasons, 40s, 50s, that's actually the hardest time to dress because things are changing so dramatically from the start to the end of the ride. So here's an example of the thin layer that I would wear.
So when you say thin, you mean like
real,
real thin. Yeah.
Yeah. I can totally see through this. Just hold, like, not clearly, but you hold it up and you can see light coming through the other side.
Which I can see why that would be good, because then if your coat's too warm, you have just that little bit underneath.
Right.
You don't go from a coat to a t-shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
Anthony.
Cool. Yeah. I love my t-shirts. Okay, I'm guilty as charged on that one.
Yeah, I've also noticed in the 40s that I like riding with the long sleeves, and then I can push the sleeves up. So I have some shirts that are very tight in the sleeves and don't push up well, and I keep those for the colder weather now, just because if I'm riding, I don't want to stop and adjust.
So then what do you do for shorts, or do you wear anything on the legs? Because It's kind of warm.
So people lose a lot less of the heat that they have in their bodies in their legs. Though it's not a big concern area for most riders. So that's where most of the minimalism in my kit comes in. And with 40s and 50s and even high 30s, sometimes I'll just have one layer on, a long pair of chamois, regular legging thickness chamois, nothing crazy. And if it's low 40s, I might pop one other layer on top of that. That could be just a regular, another second regular thin pair of leggings, or it could be something like a shell, like these here.
Oh, shell pants. I don't have those.
Yeah.
Do I have those? No, I don't have those.
Nope. I have a pair of that, not that kind, but just a, you know, I think of them as camp pants of just, you know, kind of thin material that's another layer for wind blocking. And
Genesis, yeah. Where'd you get those shell pants? Oh, are those the ones you got at Bike World?
I did get those at Bike World, yes. That particular garment is probably the most useful garment in my entire kit, and they're the old man winter pants.
Are these the ones that I remember are, like, crazy expensive?
They are pretty pricey, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But they're excellent. Yeah. And they're made by Bontrager. In case you're looking for a multifunctional pant that you can use when you're camping, backpacking, canoeing, I've used these in so many different ways. They're fantastic.
I feel like those are the pant equivalent of my coat that you made me buy.
They are, I feel like, yeah. Like a soft shell.
Yeah.
Sort of, wind something resistant, like that. Yeah.
Yeah, knowing how often you use that coat, maybe they're worth looking into.
Yeah, right. Actually, we might be doing that.
They're so great.
So that's like the top and bottom. Do you do anything different for like head coverings or gloves or feet at that point?
Yeah, the gear that I use in these warmer temperatures on my head and hands and feet is not as critical as it becomes in later temperatures. Just a thin cap on my head, if that, in the 40s. Maybe some fall gloves. Nothing crazy insulated is super necessary. Toe covers for sure, because feet don't have good blood flow when you're cycling, so you want to give them some extra attention.
I have so much to say on this temperature range. But I have these ear covers that I use. It's like a headband type thing, which is super cool. But this ties into a different episode we did where I noticed Cole Ledbetter had duct tape on the top of his shoes just to keep in the you know, the warmth.
That is so smart. Oh my gosh.
Right?
I might have to copy that. Yes.
So I have my shoe right now. I'm showing Genesis. But the reason he does this instead of buying those like neoprene covers,
yeah,
is because on the long distance ride he would rip through them and tear them up
and
destroy them.
Yeah,
whereas this he can have a little bit extra duct tape, and if he ruins it he can just rewrap his shoe. I mean, it's just the toe box area just to keep it warm so that he doesn't. I know, right?
That is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, those toe covers, they get ripped up in a season. You're guaranteed to spend $60 on something that's going to fall apart in less than a year. That is game changing.
And if you guys don't know who Cole is, he rides, I mean, he did 100 miles yesterday. He rides an insane amount, and so he tears through stuff that isn't, you know, the best stuff. So he uses duct tape because he can replace it. And that was just for lower, you know, like 40 degrees. Beyond that, I'm sure he has something else. Yeah, sorry. I got really excited about my toe covers.
That's great, dude. I'm going to be doing that if I use my flats anytime soon.
Yeah, and he did it with a clip-in pedals, I think. Or, sorry, clipless, excuse me. Clipless pedals.
Awesome.
Because it wasn't quite cold enough for a full shoe cover. I love it. But that covers head and toes. 40 to 50 degrees, you don't need much, if anything.
Yeah.
So once you get lower than that, is this when we start like piling on the layers, or is this still just its own separate like medium layer instead of light?
That could go in either direction. You can definitely build on the thin base layer you have in the warmer temperatures and just put a t-shirt over that or another long sleeve base layer, or you can get a warmer shirt altogether. At this point, it's chilly enough that you're not going to overheat if you have one of your thicker long sleeve base layers on. I personally, right now, I am upgrading to a thicker wool base layer in the 30s and high 20s. But in my first few years of cycling in the winter, I would have just built on to that thin base layer you guys saw.
So it sounds like in your head, you kind of have like all these different layers. And when the temperature drops, you'll take a layer and just upgrade it. So like you could have a thicker coat on, or you could have a thicker like base layer on.
That's right. Yes.
So it's not like one size fits all. It's as the temperatures drop, you're beefing up the layers.
Yes, I'm definitely beefing up my layers as temperature's dropping, but I couldn't afford to do that my first few years, so you don't have to beef up your base layers. Throwing a t-shirt on top of a long sleeve can give you a buffer of like 5 degrees. So
yeah, if you don't have a base layer, you can't beef it up. You go and you put on a long sleeve shirt or something.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Real versatile. You have a bunch of different tools in your arsenal, and you can combine any of those tools in any way that you think is going to work for that day's weather.
I really like the idea of, like, these are your three layers for upper, middle, lower, and then you can swap them out. I never thought of it like that. So I guess going along that, your pants, then, it would be the same thing. If you had a really light layer, maybe, or you didn't have anything, now you would have a layer, right?
That's right. I'm wearing those regular thickness chamois in the 40s, and in the 30s, I'm not wearing those at all. I'm switching to a pair of insulated long chamois.
Mm-hmm.
And I have those here, and I did wash them for you guys.
Oh, good.
Oh, nice.
So, a thin layer of fleece on the inside, nothing crazy, but it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, so I've got just the non-insulated ones, and they really feel like about the same thickness. It's just they also do have that fleece on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these aren't super thick by any means, but if I wear these in high 40s, I'm sweating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then the head, or the feet is what I struggle with quite a bit, because, okay, so it's not just me. So do you have any recommendations for, where are we at, between like 25 and 40?
Yeah. One tip that I would say before anything else with feet, and a tip that you would use only in an emergency, but is so important, is that if your feet ever get really, really cold when you're riding, unclip and walk around. Because when you are clipped into the pedals, or even if you're riding flats, mm-hmm. you don't have the same blood flow in your foot that you do when you walk. You're not using the same muscles. And so in the warm months, when that blood flow is hindered, it's no big deal. But in the cold months, it becomes a problem. And if your feet feel like you might actually have a serious health concern at hand, all you got to do is walk around. You can feel the blood rush back into your toes, and it fixes it within a couple minutes.
Yeah. That is so good to know.
Maybe activate that while you have a minor health concern before you start having no toes.
Well, you know, you don't think when you're on your bike and you're really cold, the last thing you think is stop and get off your bike.
Yeah, that's very true.
And it took me 2 years to learn that. And I thought at certain points I might have put my feet in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd have known that sooner. Just get off and walk. Or if it's really cold, I've jogged in circles around my bike on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sounds like, oh, of course I remember that. But when I did that spotted horse and it was raining all day, I didn't get off my bike, even though I couldn't feel my hands, until I literally could not shift anymore. Because I was just like, oh, I'll be fine. I'll just get through this. I'll get through this. But then my hands couldn't feel the indent on the shifters anymore, and so I couldn't shift down because I would keep shifting up. Like, I would keep shifting the wrong way.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I had to get off and, like, actually warm my hands up. So
right.
It sounds so obvious in here in our kitchen, nice and warm, but
right, yeah. It's like, you know, generally you don't want to stop moving when you're cold, but in the instance of cycling, you always have to factor in the cold air hitting your hands and your body and your feet. That doesn't happen when you're walking or doing anything else. Mm-hmm. So sometimes in cycling instances, stopping to warm up can be efficacious, but not for long. You never, ever want to let yourself cool down once you've warmed up.
Yeah, it's more get the extremities warm and then
right.
Get the core back up.
Put your fingertips in your armpits and jump around a little. But these are extreme situations, you guys, and very rarely does anybody ever have to do this. I just wanted to bring it up beforehand to put it right there in your arsenal of tools.
Well, and I think that's good because if you're testing out different layering systems and you're not 100% sure, you very well might find yourself in that situation.
You're gonna. Yeah. There's trial and error with this whole system because every listener here is going to have a different kit.
Yeah.
Nobody's kit's the same. And you can't copy what anybody recommends. You have to find your own layering system. And with that trial and error definitely comes a little bit of discomfort. That's part of the mindset you have to kind of accept when you come into this.
Yeah, I know that I definitely have a tendency to overdress just because I am scared of getting cold. Because I get cold a little bit more easily. Like, I know that if Anthony and I are in the same situation wearing the same clothing, I am always colder than he is. And so I kind of go into it concerned of like, oh, well, I'm going to be too cold. So that's something, it's good to know that if you do get into that situation, there, what to do about it.
Yeah, I actually have a list of recommendations for emergency preparedness that we can talk about if you guys want to touch on that down the line or whatever.
Yeah, we should talk about that once we get through kind of all the layers and then your, as I call it, the oh shit kit.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I dig that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if you can say that at work, but that's what I like to call it.
Do you beep over bad words on this podcast or no?
Only if they are extreme.
Yes. That one is allowed.
Yes.
Awesome.
If you were to just go, oh, fuck, then I probably would do it.
Oh, are you going to beep that one?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to beep
awesome.
That.
So I guess going back to the layering, so like the 25 to 40 range, it sounds like you've got your fleece-lined chamois on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have on the top at that point?
I still have, even in conjunction with those fleece-lined chamois, I will wear my old man winter shell pants over it.
So I just realized that a lot of times when I go out, I don't have an extra layer over my leggings. But what I do is I have a whole bunch of ski socks that are nice thick wool and come up to my knees. And so I'll put those on under my leggings. And that's kind of my first extra layer because I've never had an issue with my thighs getting cold. They're the least important part. And so I don't need to add bulk there because I think like we talked about earlier, it can get very restrictive if you have too many layers on a bike. So that's another option that might work better. And I already have ski socks, so I didn't have to go buy extra gear for it.
Well, we got those big old beefy biker thighs that are putting out 200 watts all day.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Is that
wattage
sarcasm?
Cottage.
No, I think that you guys are swole.
Well, I do think that's part of it, is you're generating all this power with your thighs and like,
yeah,
they don't need as much, you know, your calves or
your
feet.
That said, I was the weird girl in elementary school
Yes,
I was the weird girl in elementary school, but part of that is I wore knee socks and dresses that came down to my knees. And, you know, dresses don't really keep your thighs all that warm either. And I've just, that's the one place where I've never had an issue getting cold. And so for me, if I have one layer there and seven everywhere else, I'm probably fine.
And you might notice we're kind of skipping over shoes. That's a whole thing. We'll get to that.
Thicker layers on the top and fleece-lined leggings on the bottom, and you still have your extra pants over that.
Mm-hmm.
So then what do you do, you know, in that 25 to 40 range for your hands and your head?
I am upgrading the thin cap that I might, you know, in the 40s, I was almost wearing the cap that I would wear in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get into the 30s and below, I'm wearing a legit wool beanie. That's not super thick. Depending on the wind and how brave I'm feeling that day, it'll either be a thin wool like that,
mm-hmm.
or a thicker wool that's like
Ooh.
This.
Yep. So
yeah.
One is just one layer, and then the other one looks like what?
It's
two
like
layers
a dual,
put together.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you are familiar with smart wool, this would be a smart wool 250. This would be a smart wool 150, and mm-hmm. that refers the unit there refers to the thickness of the weave.
Okay.
You know, I should know that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I saw 150 and I'd be like, oh, that's nice.
That's cost $150, obviously.
Well,
with smart wool, actually.
No. That space age technology.
Okay, so that's good to know. And then,
yes. And something that will cover your ears. So mm-hmm. if the beanie doesn't reach over your lobes, then I will pull up a buff underneath my helmet and clip the helmet. I'll secure the helmet over that buff so that it holds it over my ears.
That's actually a really good trick because for my ears, just in general, Anthony absolutely loves like the ear band that he talked about earlier.
Those are great.
If I put one of those on and then I put my glasses like tucked inside that and then put my helmet on, it gives me an instant migraine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will ride without something covering my ears for way longer than I should just because I hate getting headaches like that.
Same.
So,
same.
Having the buff on and pulling it up over my ears is the last thing that I've been trying, and it's been, I need to dial it in a bit more, but that's been a really good option. My hair is long enough that I have discovered I can leave it down around my neck instead of braiding it in the winter, and that is like
yes.
a whole extra layer
Hugely
of
helpful.
Winter protection.
So,
yep.
kind of on the topic of head, can we talk about your BS? The head cover that says BS on it?
Yeah. Yes, we can. Absolutely. You should have seen the look.
God, I wish I had a picture of that. What?
Real quick before I talk about this, in regards to the glasses thing, mm-hmm. when I transitioned from summer to winter, I had the same issue with the glasses cutting into my head because I have more layers on. And so I started putting the arms of my glasses, that's definitely not the right word, mm-hmm. over my helmet straps. And that reduces all the pressure. As long as your glasses aren't already too narrow for your face, it works pretty well.
Well, my face is too narrow for most glasses, so I think that would be a rare find. I'll have to try that.
So I think this would probably transition to a lower temperature, too. But I wanted to bring up this piece of headwear because I love it, and I lost mine. But I also love it.
No, where did you lose yours?
We'll find it.
Ding dong.
If it is somewhere within the house. I will discover it one of the places he tells me he's already looked.
And if I knew where I lost it, Genesis.
You are full of sass, aren't you?
Oh, you're right.
Well, this is the brand. This is a balaclava. And it's synthetic, and the brand is Blackstrap.
Which is why it says BS on the side of it.
Yeah, and it is a medium thickness, is what I would call it. They come in different colors and patterns, and they're designed for skiing specifically. But it covers your nose and lips and the lower half of your face, your neck, your ears, the back of your head. It's all one continuous piece, and very comfortable.
So it covers everything but your eyes, essentially.
Yeah.
But the thing that I love about it, because most of them are just like one piece and stretchy, this has like kind of a separate mouthpiece that you can pull down when you're like stopped or whatever.
Yeah, it's almost like it's hinged or something. Mm-hmm. The stitch gives you a lot of versatility. And it's the only synthetic covering that I've put over my face that does not freeze up really instantly from the moisture from your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it still does accumulate a little bit of frost, but with other buffs I have, they will turn into a hard plate of ice and fabric, and this doesn't do that. I don't know why.
Yeah, Blackstar head covering.
Not when I am biking, but when I'm skiing, I have literally gotten like a layer of ice over my face because of my face covering, and then you have to pull it down, and it's actually warmer
to just have nothing there.
One thing that I do want to note that I have discovered with a lot of this gear, because Anthony is very good at losing a lot of it. If you're going to go buy something new and you're not limited in your options, please get something that is not just black. Black stuff disappears into everything.
I have a box of black stuff and I can't find anything.
Yeah, it's just this complete, like, it's...
It's a mess.
It is impossible to find anything. Whereas my head covering, I've got a hot pink one. I have a high-vis yellow one. I think one of my balaclavas is like bright blue. And so it's really nice because, A, if I drop it, I can look back and be like, oh, that color does not belong in nature. I'm going to go find that. But also when I'm getting ready, it makes it so much faster to grab different pieces mm-hmm. of equipment. And so that's something, just because winter riding does take so much more prep.
Yes.
That if you can actually find everything, you are way more likely to go ride in it.
Yeah. Black stuff loves to hide in the back closets, man.
Oh, yeah.
Holy.
I have a box that I lose stuff. It's that box right there.
Yeah.
And I lose stuff in there that... I mean, it's not that big. It's like a 12-inch by 12-inch box, and I lose everything in there.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, so very random thought there.
That piece of headgear, what would you wear that? Like, do you have a temperature range?
I am popping this on in 25 and below. And sometimes I'll wear this with my regular helmet, and sometimes I'll wear this with a ski helmet, depending on the extremeness of it.
So let's hop down to that range then. So if that's on your head, what would you do for... a top at the 15 to 25 range?
I would use the thicker of my wool base layers.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I would put a medium or thin flannel. And if it was below 20, on top of that, I would be popping a windbreaker on. And there's windbreakers that are extremely thin, and then there are semi-thick windbreakers that almost have insulation properties. Either of these are going to work. At this point, you're in temperatures that are so cold with the wind in your face that a windbreaker is not going to be a concern for sweating. Mm-hmm. And because you've got three layers, should you start to sweat, you can either open one or pop one off altogether or roll your sleeves up. So with these three things that I just said, a thick wool base layer, a flannel, and a windbreaker, I'm expecting to open one, if not two, sometime during the ride.
Mm-hmm. So below like 25, you're, I don't know, below 30, you're starting to really layer and make sure you can adjust as needed.
Yes. And this base layer, it has a collar with a zipper that allows me to close it all the way up my neck. And that's super invaluable because even with a buff or with a balaclava covering your neck, that cold wind cuts right through that fabric, and the second barrier is huge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You kind of have that neck gap where, like, your shirt might not cover.
Right.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, you're unzipping it.
Yep.
The more zippers and buttons you have on your clothing when you're biking, the better, for sure. Because even just unbuttoning the cuffs of your sleeves makes a difference.
And that's fun, because you can sew more buttons on to make, make them better.
Anthony.
Just down the arm.
You don't even need to have it be functional. It's purely aesthetic.
Just buttons are better. If I was going to describe that, I would say, like, you definitely can't see through that wool base layer. It's definitely, like, it's not a chunky sweater, but it is, you know, it's decently thick. Flannel, you know, not insanely thick, but once again, pretty solid. And then windbreaker that does have some insulation to it. I have a windbreaker that I'll carry with me just on longer rides, like in the summer for if, I don't know, something pops up. It's like not quite a rain jacket, but it would protect me if a storm came up. It is definitely more than that.
Speaking of windbreakers, once you get below 25, it's sort of necessary. If I were to eliminate anything from the three-tiered system I've got on top there, the windbreaker would be the most important. It would be not eliminated because just that breeze cutting through in those temperatures, there's no fighting it with porous fabric.
So one thing that I do want to note here, this is something that I know about you, but the listeners might not. Actually, you and Anthony both kind of have...
Secret time!
I don't even know what they're going to say.
They both tend to go stop or balls to the wall.
Oh,
Anthony,
yeah.
Will you let me say that on this podcast?
We're full ham.
Yeah. Once you guys are going, you're generating heat pretty much constantly.
Yes.
This is not a slow roll. This is going to be you're going... And you'd better catch your breath to keep up. If you are someone, either if you are riding with someone that you know is slower than you, Anthony, take this into account if you ride with me, you might need to prepare to be generating less heat.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you are planning on going out and riding, let's call it party pace, where you're tooling around and you're not going to be sweating as much, maybe this is not going to work for you. Maybe you do want another layer or a thicker layer.
Definitely. Yeah. Layer up based on your pace.
Consider mm-hmm. how hard you're going along with the temperature.
100%.
And that's the thing. It's all kind of trial and error.
Yeah.
But I can't get the stupid layers into my head. Like, I've heard this enough times, and seeing it, it makes sense. You know, you do a few layers, and then as it gets colder, you don't wear big, thick stuff. You wear a bunch of little
layers. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I mean, when I say it, it sounds obvious, but I just haven't done it.
Totally. Mm. Yeah, I had to learn the hard way. The first year, I was wearing a coat, you know, that was it. And yeah, not as easy.
So we've covered the top for the 15 to 25 range. What would you put on bottoms at that point?
I'm pretty much maintaining the same bottoms now. Until it gets below zero, I'm wearing the fleece chamois and those shell pants. Mm-hmm. And if it's really windy or something, I'll pop another thin layer of leggings somewhere in there. Usually always above the chamois to reduce seam contact.
Mm-hmm. I love your shell pants. I'm so jealous of them right now.
I have bought a second pair.
So at this point, it's just layers all the way down. I mean, the colder you get, the more you put on these thinner layers, right? We could spend 3 hours talking about these.
Yeah, there are a million different combinations, and it's up to you to find what your favorite one is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
At this point, what are you doing for your hands?
Hands are huge, and feet too. These are people's two biggest problem areas. For hands, I am lucky enough that almost always, no matter how cold I seem, I'll warm up and my hands will find that warm tingle. But some people struggle with it indefinitely. And so it's so subjective. I'll show you examples of what I've worn, but this is somewhere that I can't advise. You really have to just find out yourself. In fall conditions, I have a light fall glove that is somewhat wind resistant. I have washed these gloves too.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, so
it's not super thick.
It's definitely, it's like there's more wind resistance than what you'd find on a summer glove, I think is the biggest thing that I'd say, with a very, very light fleece lining on the inside of it.
What you're showing are kind of the high-tech bike gloves, right? Mm-hmm. They're Pearl Izumi, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when it gets a little bit colder, I have insulated work gloves that I use.
That's great.
That I got for
mechanics gloves.
Yeah, $20 or something. And they work really well up until, you know, a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, you don't have to go out and buy super expensive Pearl Izumi, but the extremities, I feel like that's where you want to spend your money.
Yes, 100%.
Because it's really hard to get it right otherwise.
It is. You can totally use any kind of glove. Snow gloves, you name it.
Can you layer gloves? Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. I have a couple different layering systems for my gloves.
Okay, so we've gotten our fall glove. What do we have after that?
This would be my 40 degrees, 30s, and high 20s would be this guy.
And just this next guy,
step up. Also washed.
So you can definitely feel there's some padding on it. It looks like it would fit just a little bit looser. The wrist extends further down so that you're not going to have that gap between your sleeve and where your glove picks up.
Synthetic insulation is one of the biggest things with these particular gloves.
Yeah, they're really kind of medium insulated, right?
Yeah. And these, I don't know why I'm so lucky with my hands, but man, my hands get so warm so easy. For me, these will go down to 15. Mm-hmm. I think for most people, this would be more like a 20 degree glove.
And then you have the claw.
The lobster, yeah. This one is like so crazy warm for me that I only wear it if it's like 10 or below.
Yeah.
I tried wearing this in 15 the other day and I was sweating in like 15 minutes.
I have a pair like that and they always are too warm. They crazy. Always seem to be too warm.
Crazy. Yeah, that's like, oh, I'm going to go out in sub-zero. I don't even know. I wasn't expecting it to be so warm.
Yeah, even me being cold all the time, if I wear like insulated gloves above, I don't know, even 25, my hands start sweating and it's just a mess.
It sucks to get them back on if you take them off.
It's really hard. Like,
that's the worst.
My hands get so hot and sweaty and I don't want to take my gloves off because I know I'm never going to get my hands back into the gloves. So that's one of the ones where I almost feel like it's better to start a little bit cold and go up slowly.
It is.
Because I would rather have slightly cold hands and then I can warm them up than have overly sweaty hands that I can't do anything about.
Yeah.
So I'm actually excited to hear about this last option that you have here. So can you tell me when you'd use that?
Yeah. So this is the hand equivalent of a rain jacket. It's just a mitten made out of membrane that is also coated in DWR. Those are both things that people use for water repellency on garments, outdoor garments and stuff. So this is a Gore-Tex membrane. It's got DWR on the outside. I bought a size or two too large because it's a mitten and I want dexterity when I'm riding.
Mm-hmm.
I pop this on either when I find I've undergloved or if it's raining, and they work very well.
And it's thin enough that it looks like you'd pack down pretty easily, so you could bring it with you as a backup.
Yes. There's no insulation at all. It's strictly a rain jacket mitten.
Yeah. That makes sense. Mitten. A jacket mitten. And it doesn't have any insulation to it. It's just waterproof.
Right, right. Obviously, it's not like the most confidence-inspiring thing to be breaking and shifting in mittens, but it's not the end of the world if you get a size or too big, and then you're fine.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've used trash bags before to be waterproof.
Yeah.
Would not recommend that if you can help it.
No, it's not great. These are awesome emergency kit gloves. And I will say that of all the clothes you can wear when you're winter cycling, the gloves are the only ones where I find myself bringing another pair, a different pair, because you start so cold, it's hard to warm your fingers up. So you wear the warmer ones first, and then once you start sweating, you put those in your bag and you get your cooler ones out. It sounds ridiculous, but I find myself bringing an extra pair of gloves on most really cold rides.
And that makes sense. I mean, that's the hardest part to do anything about if you under-prepare. So then what would you wear if you were to do like a 1,000-mile bike race in Alaska?
I'd probably get some Pogie lights.
Oh, we didn't mention those. Steve Cannon did a 1,000-mile bike race in Alaska, and he wore these mitts that were the size of my freaking ski helmet. The most ridiculous, warmest things on Earth. He named him. That's how much he loved these things. They're made of some kind of animal fur. He got them gifted to him, and he actually did a presentation. He does his presentations with them on, the two that we saw anyway. That's how much he loves these things. So gloves are kind of important.
These things are insane. Like, I got to put my hand in one of them. This was before COVID was a huge issue, and it was just like, we're standing in a decently heated room, and I think I overheated with my hand in that glove in like 30 seconds. But I can totally see how that would be, you know, the difference between being able to use your fingers and having them freeze off if you're doing the Iditarod.
Yeah, he loved his gloves so much, he wears them to presentations. That's how important gloves are. Have you ever used like Pogi Lights or like the ones that go over the bar
mitts? The mitt covers?
Yeah.
Not personally, no. I have had so little issue with keeping my hands warm that those would be major overkill for me.
Yeah. I would definitely plug the Pogi Lights because they're so skinny. They're kind of like the rain cover in that you can just pack them down or you can move them off your bars if you need to.
Yeah, they're essentially the same thickness as that rain mitten.
Yeah, I really like them because you can just kind of put them on the inside of your bars if you don't want them.
That's cool. I didn't know that. I've heard a lot of people say good things about them.
They are amazing. They are rather expensive.
Yes.
They are made local by some people. So yes. I would highly recommend them if you can afford it.
You guys shop local.
But yeah, Anthony and I were out riding once, and I definitely wore gloves that were too cold for it. And my hands got cold. I did not have adequate gloves on. And Anthony took pity on me and let me have his Pogi Lights. And they immediately warmed my hands up just because it's another layer of wind protection. And what Genesis was saying about, you know, not being able to shift, these are mitts that go over your bars and shifters, and so you still have your dexterity inside of them because they're made to handle that.
Yeah, the only negative is that you have to stick your hands in them, so if you do, they're kind of hard to get on because they're so flexible, and if you do wreck, I don't know what you would even do, but that's kind of hands and staying warm. Mm-hmm.
So, Genesis, just a little bit ago, you mentioned starting cold. Tell us about, you know, what warmth level do you want to be at when you start your ride?
I have a saying to remind myself that's pretty counterintuitive. It is start warm, start cold. And what that means is when you are getting ready to go on your cold ride, make sure inside of your house or apartment that you are as toasty as you can be. Don't grab your shoes from the garage. Everything has to be room temp, if not warmer. And if you're feeling even a little chilled, turn the heater on or stand in front of the oven. And then once you get outside, get going quick as possible. Don't fill up your tires outside. Don't dawdle around and lose your body heat. Because ideally, if you're dressed right, you are starting your ride underdressed. And you're going to be chilly for the first 2 or 3 miles. And then you warm up enough that you're glad you didn't wear more. But you have to be willing to sacrifice comfort for a few minutes.
So, dress where you want to be, not where you're at.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like what they say in business.
That's exactly right.
And then one other thing that we kind of touched on but haven't really gone into is you mentioned a ski helmet. And that's something that we do in the winter as well, as we wear our ski helmets and goggles. And that can be really nice just for, you know, your head actually does stay warm. I do want to note, I have heard people say that you should not officially use ski helmets for biking because they're not rated for it. The kind of biking that we're doing, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be fine with it. I go a lot faster on my skis than I do on my bike.
Well,
but just do be aware of that.
The impact velocities and types are almost the exact same between skiing and biking.
Obviously.
Yeah. But they're not
sorry,
rated.
Engine nerd coming out.
They're not rated for biking. So you'll get some people who say that, oh, that's not an official thing.
Yeah.
It is a hack that I have found that makes riding in cold weather bearable.
Those ski helmets are so sturdy, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I've wrecked harder skiing than I have biking. Like,
oof. So on the note of goggles, there's definitely a temperature where you want to switch from glasses to goggles.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, is mid-20s. Or if it's not windy, maybe 20. But the big thing with that is, I'm sure you guys have noticed when you're riding in the cold that it can get a little snotty. Anthony's looking at me clueless. But I'm constantly clearing my sinuses when I'm riding in the cold. And I find that if I've got goggles, keeping my sinuses warm, they won't gunk up. And I don't have that issue at all.
Oh, yep. That makes sense.
So Yes, goggles are great for eye protection, which can actually become a concern in cold temperatures. So protect your eyes, but also it's a comfort thing. Not having to blow every 5 minutes is awesome.
Yeah, I actually carry Kleenexes with me in my winter kit. And it's really annoying when I'm very cold and have to take off my face covering and my gloves and blow my nose. And then 5 minutes later, it's back to where I started.
It's right back where you
Have we talked about shoes yet?
No, I was just going to ask about that. Genesis,
I really
want
to talk about shoes. My feet are so cold.
Shoes.
I mean, not right
feet.
Now.
Feet. You guys, this is the worst part of winter riding for
most
people.
I hate it.
It's impossible. I'll tell you what. I spent the first two winter seasons really struggling to find something that was economical and also worked. You could spend $300 on cycling-specific winter boots, and they might not even keep you warm. You don't know.
Yeah, I've seen
so
that.
So the first question you want to ask yourself about shoes is, A, do you have to clip in? If you are willing to not clip in, you have so many more options. And if you're planning on riding in big snow or in ice, you don't want to be clipping in anyways because your cleats are going to pack with snow. If you hit ice, you want to be able to dismount really quickly. If you're willing to not clip in, buy some great insulated winter snow boots or some hiking shoes that are insulated. Those usually have really stiff platforms that still allow some good power transference.
Mm-hmm.
And they're cheaper and they're easier to find. But if you have to clip in, you have some workarounds and you have some really expensive options, none of which I have found are exceptional.
Yeah, if you have to clip in, be prepared to spend some dough.
Yeah,
I've got a pair of snow boots I bought in high school from Walmart, and they, because I don't use them all year, I still have them, and I use them all the time, and they're phenomenal, just because they're a little big, so I can layer them and whatnot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you can go with flats, I think you're going to save a lot of money in that department.
You certainly will. And if you have to have some sort of clip-in situation, nobody kill me for saying this. Worst case scenario, you can't afford clipless boots. Get some good hiking boots that are insulated and then buy some cages. Oh my God. I'm so sorry for saying that, you guys. But it's an option. If you really, really want to have a pull on your up pedal, you can get some cages and work with those.
Yeah. And if you're really pulling hard on the up pedal, learn to pedal better.
Right.
I'll let people be mad at me, Genesis. Don't worry.
One other thing that we have this set up on our fat bike right now is you can get pedals that have flats on one side and clips on the other side. And so we have that. And I'm riding in flats all the time right now. And so I typically just go out with my flats and I'll switch between my 510s if it's decent weather. Or I think I said in the last podcast, I think they're technically UGG brand boots, which sounds horrible to say that, but they're just insulated, like almost knee high winter boots. And that's what I bike in the winter. But if Anthony wants to go out on a warmer day and wear his, well, I guess you have the insulated clip in shoes too.
They're not insulated. They're just windproof.
Okay. He has that option. And since we're sharing the fat bike, that's a good way to do it.
So Anthony said windproof shoes. That's the thing. If you're going to go for a shoe that's not cycling specific and you're looking at different types of warmth, go for the shoe that is waterproof and windproof over the shoe that has a lot of cushy insulation, but maybe porous.
Are you talking like for flats, not clipless shoes, right?
Right. Yes. If you're just going to go with an impromptu shoe that's a multi-purpose shoe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get something that's leather or that is solid around the entire upper so that there's no porousness, there's no breathability, because the wind is what gets your toes more than anything. If you had a super insulated shoe, like an, not that your Uggs weren't good.
Like crappy Uggs.
Yeah. Like an Ugg that has a porous leather or a porous synthetic, then the wind's going to cut right through that, even if it's an inch thick.
Yeah, the typical Ugg that you think of.
Yes, exactly.
The sorority girl Ugg.
Yeah. Yes, which I do love those.
These ones, the specialized some kind or another, are the ones that I bought for when I used to commute back in the day last year.
Yeah, he's holding an ankle-high, clipless, waterproof, windproof shoe that has a neoprene collar on it, and it looks like it's not porous at all. It has a boa on it so it can ratchet down. Looks like a smart, sleek, good design for a, a winter riding shoe.
Dang, that's a sexy f***ing shoe, Anthony. And, I mean, the point is, it's not insulated. But I wear it when it gets cold because then I don't get my feet soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good in rain because it will get full of rain.
Hate that.
Yeah, I tried that once. And I mean, when I commuted, I would wear these down to like 35 degrees just because all it needed to do was keep the wind off my feet.
It's all about the wind.
Yeah. No trouble.
If you want to clip in, but you don't want to spend big bucks, here are your cheap workarounds, none of which look good. But
none of them are pretty.
No, they're not. But I used one of these for 2 years, and it works well. You can use your normal pair of clipless shoes with an XL pair of insulated socks stretched over them, and then you cut a hole out for the cleat. And then if it's windy on that day, you can even take some sort of liner or a bag, like one of those wind-resistant shoe covers, mm-hmm. and put that over that sock. So it's like you're creating a layer of insulation and a layer of windproof on top of the shoe you already have. You just cut out holes for your cleats. You can use some duct tape to keep things in place. It's really ding-dong looking, but it really works, and it's very cheap.
I have got a story.
Go to a thrift store for those big socks. Mm. Don't buy a brand new pair of XL socks. Or if you're already an XL, you're going to need to find some even bigger sizes. That's when it gets tricky. But
yeah. One big thing. So you mentioned shoe covers. Mm-hmm. I have a pair of shoe covers, and Jen bought a pair of shoe covers. Jen got the cheap ones. I got the expensive ones.
Oh, my God.
And it was worth every penny to get the more expensive ones.
Mine disintegrated.
Yeah. Yes. I did the spotted horse with my more expensive ones. And I would walk through mud that would actually rip the cover off the front of the shoe, and the thing held together.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible.
But I did not put them through that much, and mine still disintegrated.
Yeah, Jen did not do this, and hers disintegrated with just normal riding.
Yeah.
But as far as the bags go, I ended up wrapping my feet in trash bags on the spotted horse because I was so poorly prepared that I was about to lose my mind if my feet got wet anymore. Mm-hmm.
Bags are great in a pinch. You can stop at any gas station at any time during the day in an emergency and get free plastic. It's invaluable. I have done that.
Oh, I could have just asked for plastic bags.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Well, Anthony's learning a lot of things today.
Anthony's.
Those not shoe covers, strong. Though, I tell customers all the time, if you are going to buy a pair of shoe covers, they're only going to last you a season unless they're really expensive. And in that case, you may as well just be buying a pair of shoes.
Yeah, and I actually accidentally bought the expensive ones. I thought they were on sale, and then I paid for them. I was like, well, crap. And I still have them, and Jen does not have the ones.
Yeah, your money definitely is worth it in those instances.
So you mentioned in a pinch, and I think this is a good time for the oh shit kit talk.
Yeah.
Of, I guess, probably light little things you can bring with you that if you're in trouble will get you home.
Yeah.
Like, don't plan on using these, but it'll get you home.
So what is your oh shit kit?
I have less of a kit for winter specifically as I do a series of choices, options that I wouldn't even consider in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So first things first, always if you're planning on going out for a winter ride that's longer than 5 miles, always have somebody know where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good just all the time.
Yes. And if you can have a backup ride, somebody who would be willing to come grab you, it is not fun fixing a flat in 20 degrees. I've done it, and it sucks. The metal rim on your fingertips, it's not good.
Yeah. I call that the evac plan.
Yeah, if you flat and you have somebody who can come get you, it's more worth it to call them than it is to suffer. Or if you flat and you're near any store, go inside and change your flat in the Walmart, in the gas station. Do not change your flat outside if you can avoid it. Seems obvious, but I have seen people changing their flats outside in front of a gas station before, and it's 25 degrees.
And it's not necessarily obvious, but when you factor in that you planned on, you're layered to be warm and moving, that when you stop moving, you're going to be cold like when you started.
Yes, and once you lose your heat, it's a lot harder to regain it the second time.
That's just entropy.
So always have that safety person at a disposal for you, and staying near a safety zone, which is what I meant. Don't go on a 60-mile gravel ride when it's 20 degrees unless you are 100% sure that you can handle it. Stay in town. Stay near businesses. Any business is going to take a cyclist in emergency. Let them come in and warm up.
Yeah.
So consider every single business that you drive by a plan B.
Yeah. Have an evac plan no matter where you break down.
And that just doesn't mean a breakdown. That means if you get too cold, if you start to feel hypothermic, If you bonk, you burn calories so much faster in the winter, you will bonk easier. And it's not good to bonk in the cold. So if you start bonking, don't try to make it home if you're like 20 miles out. Holy crap, just go into a business and warm up.
I think this is something that we might have actually talked about when we talked about, you know, winter riding and overheating. But when we're doing a lot of our longer rides, you know, gravel rides, being aware of a place that, like, it's kind of your last call, like you can turn off and cut half of the route off. Yes. That's something that very much applies here too. Just like, hey, I'm not feeling great. I don't think I can do another 30, 40, 50 miles. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn and go back here and not get in that situation where I need an evac.
It's kind of like flying planes. Yeah. Always have an engine out plan, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. And this isn't so important in the summer. So people don't even think to make a plan, but when it's 20 degrees, things can seem real dire. So it's nice to have it.
Yeah. If you stop in the summer because you're overheating, you'll probably cool down because you stop moving. Mm-hmm. If you stop in the winter because you're too cold,
you'll cool down because you're not moving.
Yeah. Things get
so. Other things. Your electronics are all going to die quicker. This includes your bike computer, your lights, your phone, everything. Keep your phone near your body at all times, or you can expect it to die. That means a jersey pocket, I'll wear a fanny so I can keep it against my back, or just a jacket pocket, but it would suck to not have an emergency phone. And if I can't keep it near my body, I'll bring an extra charging block for it. What else? Your water bottle is going to freeze.
Yeah, what do you do about that?
So to keep the lid from freezing, you can put the water bottle in the cage upside down. And that will prevent the lid from freezing solid so that you can still drink. If you are going on a ride where the whole thing might freeze solid, if you have any old wool socks that are kind of holy, cut the end off one and you've got a koozie for your bottle.
Yeah.
And pour warm water.
Yeah. I have a pair of Baptized socks.
Nice.
They're pretty holy.
Baptized.
One other thing to note with is that if you typically ride with a hydration pack, the line on that is going to freeze quicker than a water bottle because it's thinner. That's something that we saw when we were out at the checkpoints for Spotted Horses here. Is that people were coming in and they could still get their water bottles, but the ones that had hydration packs, those were kind of SOL.
Yeah, and that's why I fill my Camelback with 100 proof whiskey.
Awesome.
No, one of these days I'm going to actually do that and see what you do.
The solution to that is if you can, tuck it near your body. I've seen people who will put Camelbacks under their coat.
Mm.
And also you can tuck the tube into your coat when you're not using it, which will keep it from freezing. Because once that thing freezes, you can't get water anymore. That's kind of important.
Yeah, or just remembering to take a lot of small sips, because if you keep water moving, it's not going to freeze as easily.
All right, what else you got?
Just things to keep in mind, that if you're commuting, morning and afternoon temps will differ wildly, especially in the shoulder seasons. So, you know, in one, you're either overdressed or underdressed. Be prepared for that. It takes a long time to kit up for the winter, so start in advance if you've got a schedule or a destination.
Yeah, that's huge. When I would commute to work in the before times, I would spend like 20 minutes getting ready to bike 15 minutes.
Yeah. And finally, there is a compounding psychological effect with the dark and cold, which is extremely negative and hard to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just bad when you're riding. It's bad when you're trying to get out there in the first place. So overcoming the dark and cold battle is huge. And it's mostly about mental attitude. So I like to do little things in my winter months to cheer up my bike rides. I have specific playlists that I'll listen to. I will put Christmas lights on my bike. I'll put more lights on my front headlights and tail lights, just because drivers can see easier and winter drivers are not ready for cyclists. They're not expecting you.
Yeah.
So more lights is always better. And just things to cheer up, you know, to cut the darkness a little bit. I know that seems silly, but when mindset is everything, it makes a big difference.
One huge thing that I've learned from you, actually, is bringing like hot chocolate or something warm with you.
Yes.
I have that bottle cage that you can like ratchet down. So you could bring a goddamn keg if you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love hot chocolate or hot cider in a mug.
Yeah.
I have those that on rides, most winter rides.
Yeah, it's amazing. You stop in the middle of the forest and you're just like, oh, I'm so happy.
So cozy.
I know, right?
The little things.
Yeah, that's a huge psychological boost because normally you're stopping and you're having cold water and it's like just having that treat, be it coffee or hot chocolate or cider or whatever.
But that's really it. You know, a lot of it is more principles than things you can bring with you. Things that actually can help. Studs on your tires. More lighting. Extra lighting.
All the lighting.
Yes.
Drones
fenders
with lights. Helicopters.
To keep moisture off of you and your bike. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Genesis, I think this will be our longest episode we've ever done.
I'm sorry, everyone who's listening.
No, it's phenomenal. And part of that is because I'm so bad at this personally that I have actual questions. I need help.
I feel like this is really, if we can apply this, it's definitely going to change how we bike in the winter.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't. Except that I'd like to thank everybody who helped me get to this point, because it wasn't just me and initiative that got me here. I learned all of these tips and tricks, or most of them, from people that I've worked with at REI and Bike World. And in particular, Brett has been a huge inspiration to me. I remember the first time I saw him right away from work in the falling snow at 9:30 p.m. and there was 2 inches on the ground. And that was what showed me that anything is possible.
And instead of writing him off, you went, oh,
yes,
I want to do that.
That's exactly right. It was super inspirational. So there's so many people that have helped me get here. And I am really thankful to have friends who inspire me and push me every day.
Yeah, that's good. We didn't help you with the nighttime stuff. That's for darn sure.
You guys helped me with the mountain biking stuff.
Yeah, that's our kind of area.
Well, I think that's all that we have for today. Until next time, you can find us on Instagram at bottom.bracket.biking. If you have any questions for us or for Genesis, you can reach out. If you want to go through us, we'll make sure that she gets them and can respond.
Or come see me at Bike World.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm on Urbandale, 6600 Urbandale. I'll be there during the day waiting for you to find people.
Yeah, Bike World, they've got a ton of warm gear.
Yeah.
Do you have those shell pants?
Oh, yeah.
You might not after
different
this episode.
Colors. I know, right?
Different colors.
Black and gray now.
Oh,
fancy.
My goodness. That is wonderful. Well, thank you all for listening today. Ride dirt, not mud.
Don't worry, be happy now.